All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Neil, in broadcasting from River Falls, Wisconsin, how's it going this week, man?
It's gone pretty well. Just finished hanging out with New Kirks for a few days and went to a wedding last weekend. So, overall things are going pretty well for me.
And how
Nice.
is young Xander?
He's doing good, I think. He's making some maps. Young Baxter got a promotion at his job, so it was much merriment was to be had.
Nice.
And I heard Xander applied to a job in Minneapolis, so hopefully he gets that, and then at least two of us could be here.
Nice.
No pressure for anybody else. Well, that's good. And okay, so your school year's over, and do you have any other prospects on the horizon, Neil?
At this point, not right now. Now that I'm settled in at my mom's, I'm gonna be sending out some job applications and stuff, but mostly I'll just be on vacation for June, and
Nice.
it's
That's
kind of the
good.
way I like it. Hell
And
yeah.
are you applying to jobs out in Denver and Longmont, or are you applying back here, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna renew my lease. I'm not seeing a reason to move just yet.
Right. Well, Godspeed. Good luck. Say hi to your. I feel like Carl Weezer from Jimmy Neutron. Say hi to your mom for me. Gideon, how's it going, man?
It's going good. One thing not so good. I think I'm coming down with a cold because or something because Alyssa's been sick. I think I'm starting to get it. Kind of a busy month. It sounds like I might have jury duty next week. So that's fun. But other than that, let's see. I beat Split Fiction. Let's see. I'm still reading Batman Long Halloween, but I do it like sometimes like at night before bed. I'm reading Hulk Gray right now, which is really awesome. What else have I done?
I've heard through the grapevine that the final level of Split Fiction is insanity.
It is really impressive.
Okay.
Visually, it's nuts. And the way they're able to do everything that they're doing and the game still running so buttery smooth is seriously impressive. And like for it being such a co-op centric game, like obviously you can play it online in co-op, but it is a better experience playing the final level in local split screen co-op.
Right, of course. Okay.
Which is really cool. Had a lot of fun with it. My only major issues with that is like, God, I find these characters so fucking annoying. Like, I
Oh,
really
yeah, they're
can't stand
horrible.
them. I really like, I'm trying and I loved It Takes Two, and those characters got annoying too, but I feel like not to the degree that these fucking characters did. And both me and Alyssa were just like, oh my God. I was near the end, I was like, I need to take a fucking like couple days break from this game because they're
Yeah.
driving me insane.
Their games keep getting better and the lead characters keep getting worse, because I really like the two guys in A Way Out. I think those two guys
So
are really
funny.
funny, but like
I agree.
then It Takes Two, they got worse, and then in Split Fiction they're like
Oh
insufferably
my
bad.
God, it is rough. But yeah, we finished that. We finished season two of The Rehearsal on HBO, HBO Max, which that maybe is some of the best like pseudo documentary type thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was incredible. Like, that was really fucking awesome. And we started watching Fleabag today, which I've heard about for like years, and it's only like two seasons, and they're like six episodes each, like 30 minutes. And I started watching was it How To with John Wilson? Have you guys seen that? You know what I'm talking about?
I
Never
can't
heard of
say
it.
that I've heard of that one.
It's let me I think it came out around 2020, maybe earlier than that. But it's executive produced by Nathan Fielder, but it's just like a weird another almost kind of like slice of life, like awkward comedy series. But he's just like filming like crazy shit happening in New York, and like the first episode was just about like how to make small talk, and he's just like talking to all these random people and trying to get advice with that. And it's just like, it's just nuts. Like, let's see. Yeah, it came out in 2020 to 2023. But yeah, so I've been doing that, playing a little more Death Stranding. I need to get back to Doom Dark Ages. I haven't really started back up again lately. But so yeah, I've been watching a lot of stuff, reading a bunch of comics and stuff. Having fun with that, and it's just been hot, so I shaved the beard. So now I just got the stash.
Yeah, is it pretty hot in Muscatine?
It's like, it's definitely getting there. Like, it's, I think we finally started kind of like cracking like almost 80s. Like, it looks like next week it's going to be entering the 80s, but it's also been like really rainy, so it's just kind of like muggy and hot, and that's really rainy. So
yeah. South Iowa swamp kind of thing going on. I know how it is. No, it's beautiful in Minneapolis. It is literally 72 degrees and sunny out right now. Nice. I will say one thing about this state is, yeah, like the winters are insufferably long and insufferably cold, and there's, you know, it's just the winter goes literally from like before Halloween to like after Easter's over. Jeez. So, you know, it's like really, really cold for a long time. However, the summers are exceptionally good because obviously it doesn't get as hot. So it's just great up here all summer.
Nice.
So that's good. It's bike season. Although after my excursion last weekend, I have not been out on the bike as much, obviously. So I haven't been doing that. I have been playing Death Stranding a lot. I've been needing something to kind of like pick up and put down while I wait for the Switch to get here.
And the second one's this month, right? Like end of the month?
Second Death Stranding is at the end of the month. Okay. And this is part of the sight gag that I teased for you guys. So I decided that to understand Hideo Kojima, I must become Hideo Kojima.
Oh, God. You want to explain for the audio listeners?
Yeah, I'm just wearing my Kojima Productions jacket, and I shaved my beard into a little Hideo Kojima half-mustache goatee thing that's not really connected at the sides. So I kind of look like a pirate, I guess. So
it looks good.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, I had to... gotta take those off. This is getting
I was really wondering what it was gonna be.
Like, yeah,
that's funny.
That was stupid. Okay, so yeah, I've been playing Death Stranding and just you know, going up over the hill, and then the low roar comes on, and I've got like I got 2 tons of fucking packages behind me. And, you know,
every
so,
time. Or go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's like when Death Stranding came out, I wouldn't say that I was like, I wasn't disappointed at all. I was really excited that like Kojima got to do his new thing, but there was definitely part of me that was like, I hope that this is a one-off and then he goes back to doing something else. Not that I didn't like it, but I was like, okay, you know, let's see something else from Kojima. And now that the second game's about to come out, I'm like, I'm so psyched for the second game. You know, I'm like,
I'm very excited.
And now that I'm replaying the original, there's just nothing like it. And I still think it is pound for pound the most beautiful game I've ever seen in my life.
Damn. It is gorgeous.
Because, like, you know, like, fidelity-wise, it looks great. But then, I mean, like, the art of it is fantastic. The mocap is fantastic. The environments look just so, like, the sound. Like,
yeah.
On a technical level, I think it's, like, still the best-looking game. You know, the most impressive game I've ever seen. So
it's fucking crazy. I'm glad I haven't had a chance to really play it till now. And now I'm playing it on PS5 with, like, the resistive triggers and stuff. I feel like it really helps with the hiking gameplay.
It sings on PS5, that's for sure. And like with the good headphones on, and you're just like, oh my God, he's not even human. But yeah, it's a great experience, and I'm glad to be having it again. And it's a nice, like, relaxing game. Like, I just finished Doom the Dark Ages this week, and I was like pretty disappointed overall. And
yeah,
you know, like, I don't know about if you guys ever feel this way, but like sometimes I get done with a movie or a game that I find myself disappointed in, and I find myself thinking, like, oh my God, am I growing out of video games, or am I growing out of these kinds of movies? Like I'm the problem, right? And then I play something really good, and I'm like, oh no, that game just sucks. that's how I feel with like playing Doom of the Dark Ages and then playing Death Stranding. I'm like, oh no, I'm not like growing out of video games. It's just that Doom of the Dark Ages isn't very good and Death Stranding is fucking awesome. So, excited to get deeper into it and kind of finish it out. And I'm going to really like work on the infrastructure this time and like getting all my roads built and Gideon and I built a couple highways for you. So as soon as you get to chapter 3, things should be pretty easy.
I should be right at the edge of that. Like
you're right at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you've got a boss fight in between you and
right. Because I'm not trying to like rush it since this is like kind of my first proper playthrough. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of shocking how much you can kind of do in those early hours. And they'll be like, oh, go back all the way to Bridge Knot City or whatever it's called.
Once you get the motorcycle, it's just like, vroom, I'm there.
Yeah. Oh, man. I made a clip, too, just like trying to. I was like, man, it's like the Skyrim horses all over again. I'm like climbing the mountain, fucking ramming into the rocks everywhere, like trying to jump up. Like,
yeah.
So good.
Well, I mean, as horrible as this sounds, like, you know, like people use Skyrim as a verb. Like, I Skyrimmed my way up the mountain. Like, you just jumped until you like clipped through the rocks and you got all the way up. Like, that's the experience. That's like, if they made that into a game, that entire game is Death Stranding. So,
yeah.
Like, I'll put down a bridge or a ladder over a river and then drive my motorcycle over it at like 30 miles an hour and try not to like steer off of it or whatever. People do some crazy shit. Anyway, this is not the Death Stranding cast. This is Sigma Cinema, where we're here to talk about a movie that Gideon wanted to bring to the podcast today. I'm gonna pin this squarely on him.
Yeah.
So Gideon, why don't you tell us why you wanted to bring Cruel Intentions to the podcast?
So nothing like really prompted me to bring this. I just thought it'd be funny since you guys both hadn't seen it. So I have only seen this once before, and Letterboxd says I logged it like January 2024. And sometimes Alyssa and I will do what I would call almost like DVD oddities. Like, I'm a really big fan of like late 90s, early 2000s, just that like almost like Y2K era. And there's like so many movies that I just missed from that era and don't even know about. And this was one of them. And so when I watched it last year, I thought it was fucking crazy. And it's like, you won't have a movie like this today. And they like made like a remake of this movie, but it's a TV show that I think came out last year. But I haven't heard anybody talk about it. I doubt it's anywhere near this movie. But I just thought it was totally batshit crazy. Like, this weird, like, extremely sexually charged, just like strange, like rom-com, almost like backstabbing mystery movie. To put it succinctly, there's a Letterboxd review I wanted to read to try and frame it. And my review, all I wrote was, this shit was crazy. That was my initial review. But let me see real quick. It was just, somebody said, Dorsey on Letterboxd said, they don't make garbage this delicious anymore. I feel like that is a pretty good way to think about this movie. I mean, I'm just super keen to hear you guys' thoughts on this. And you know, it was just kind of a shorter, fun movie. So that's kind of where I went with it.
So you were introduced to this by Alyssa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where did she just saw it forever ago?
I think she probably like maybe her parents or something had a DVD of it like growing up. I'll have to ask her exactly like when she first saw it. But she has like, I don't know, like 500 DVDs. We just have a big binder. So we'll just kind of like go through that. I don't know if we watched this on a DVD the first time. I don't think so. But I just remember she was like, dude, this is crazy. Like, you should check this out just to see how crazy this is. Yeah.
Neil, had you ever heard of this movie before?
Yeah. I don't know if it was like in late high school or sometime getting into college, but a friend of mine from high school at one point was like, dude, Neil, you really need to watch this movie called Cruel Intentions. And I looked up the cover and was like, no, I'm not going to watch this movie.
like I don't know what his particular story connection, you know, desire towards the movie was, but he was really into it at the time. I'm gonna send this episode to him when someone
done. You were like, bud, there was no lightsabers in the front of this movie. Why do you think I'd be into this? Something like this.
I was interested to see that Sarah Michelle Gellar was in it as the bad guy. Because I just associate her so strongly with good guy roles that it just shocked me to see her be the evil person in here, but
Daphne in the live Scooby-Doo movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Buffy Vampire Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about the extent of my knowledge of it going into it.
So your friend never, like, did he expound on like why he thought this was something you should check out or why he thought you'd like it or whatever?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
I had also never heard of this movie, you know, and that's like, I don't want to say this is like a B movie or a bad movie or an indie movie or whatever, but you know, there are some like fairly major stars in this, and I had just never heard of this, ever, wasn't familiar with it. Like,
yeah,
sometimes I don't know a movie I don't know it by name, but I'll see the cover art and there's like a part of me that remembers like running through Blockbuster as a young kid and seeing it, but no, nothing. Like, this is ringing zero bells for me.
Yeah, I think similar for me, like almost totally blank, like no trailers, no frames of it, nothing like that. Yeah.
Nothing like that. I recognized Sarah Michelle Gellar, of course, and I recognized Reese Witherspoon. Is this Reese Witherspoon's first movie? Like, is this her breakout? Well, breakout role and first movie, I guess, are two very different things. But let me look up her filmography here and see how early this is in her. No, she'd been in a few other things, but I think this was probably something that made her take off in a bigger way. Wasn't familiar with it at all. Grace had never heard of it either. We watched it together. And the first person I've actually met who knew what it was I talked to my boss Patrick at work about it, and Patrick knew all about this movie because he said he had a big crush on Ryan, how do I say this guy's last name?
I'm gonna say Philippe.
Philippe.
Yeah,
okay.
I really don't know.
I'll say Philippe.
I'll ask Google.
Yeah, and that's really all I knew about it. So, how about we'll start with Neil. Give me your 10,000-foot thoughts, kind of overall watching Cruel Intentions, and then we'll go to me and we'll work backward to Gideon because I think it's only fair that we say it before, you know, before Gideon goes.
This is gonna be kind of telling for me. This isn't the worst movie we've ever done on the podcast, but it is possibly my least favorite.
Even more than Beau's Afraid.
I need to think about this, but
Neil, this one isn't 3 hours long, though. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to come down on this is my least favorite, but it's definitely a contender. I need to think about it and compare. But I was just like so uninterested in everything. I think like from a production standpoint, you know, it's well done. Like, you know, I'm not gonna tear it apart for like, you know, bad cinematography, bad lighting, bad whatever. I do feel like a couple of actors and actresses were kind of phoning it in though.
Like who?
Sarah Michelle Gellar for one. Like, It's kind of a question of like, I don't think she's a bad actress. I've enjoyed her in other things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is just like, again, like she's not used to playing the bad guy. So like it came off as kind of stilted, or maybe she's meant to be a little more cartoonish. And that was why some of her line delivery was the way that it was. I think there are a variety of different explanations you could feasibly come up with, but she was just very hammy to me in a way that I didn't find appealing. And then I was struggling the whole time listening to Ryan Philippe talk, because I could swear that I've like heard him or seen him in something else. And then I went through his IMDb page and there was like nothing that I could relate back to. I was just like, what? It was very confusing, but
I wonder if he did like some voice work or something.
I think he has, but it wasn't anything that I recognized.
Oh, so, well, here we go. It says he was a character named Wally on King of the Hill.
Yeah, but episode, that's like,
twas yeah,
like one episode.
No, I don't think it would be that.
Okay.
But yeah, I think like in retrospect, I think I can understand why my friend would have really liked this movie. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think some of this is like, you know, marketing or, you know, like, yeah, like you know, we've mentioned other things where like maybe Neil mentioning that he likes this, it has him on a list somewhere. I feel like this is definitely a, if you look at this movie at our age, you might be on a list. It definitely wasn't made for me. And even like as a horny teenager, I don't think I would have been particularly engaged by it. But I can see like where other people might have latched onto it.
I think I would have been engaged for that reason for exactly one scene and then the rest of the movie. No. I was kind of right there with you, Neil, where it's like not the worst movie we've done for the podcast, but kind of down there in the bottom five or something like that. And not because I think it's not particularly like well made or anything like that, but the things that I think I would normally latch onto with a movie just aren't here. Like, I think the biggest problem here is that like everybody in this movie is like fucking despicable. It's like, who am I supposed to be rooting for here? Like Ryan Philippe, who is like, you know, trying to bang everything that moves just to add into this journal, or Sarah Michelle Gellar, who's like, you know, school homecoming queen, but is constantly like snorting coke out of her. And they have just such like Upper East Side rich kid problems that I just don't care about. They're like, well, if I lose, I'll give you my 57 Porsche or whatever it was. And I'm just like, the stakes here really couldn't be much lower. If like, I don't really care about any of these people or your stupid problems. And like, from the beginning, they're both like massive flirts and like trying to screw everything that moves. But I don't really understand why. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that eventually there's a contest going on, but I don't really understand why these people are this way to begin with.
Right. It feels like, for me, like almost like a poster child movie for those just like trashy romance novels you see just on the shelf, like in a store somewhere. And like a perfect amalgamation of those, from what I can tell, at least.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I read a little bit that it's supposed to be based on, it's based on like a book or a play that was written in France, right? Okay. And it's about like people of the high society of that time engaging in like much of the same behavior. And like, that's all well and good, and I can appreciate that that exists, but that doesn't mean that I like any of the characters in this movie. Mm-hmm. Or like, to me, it's like, it's kind of confusing because like, I don't particularly like anybody in this movie and I don't understand their intentions. However, where the movie really goes off the rails for me is like the last 15 or 20 minutes, like when Ryan Philippe has like a turn and he's like all of a sudden in love with Reese Witherspoon, and we're expected to be like, oh no, you know, everything's fine and he really is in love. I was just like, oh my God, fucking kill me. Like, I don't want to. Like, that was where I was enjoying it more, when everybody was just being such a bastard. And when everybody like had their come to Jesus moment at the end of the movie, I was like, I was super, that was like where it was in one star territory for me.
Wow.
But the rest of the time, like the previous hour it's like, I don't like any of these people and they're bastards and I don't really care about this movie, but
right,
there's always something here. And it was like that last 15 minutes, they threw it out the window and I was like, damn, they should have just stuck to being like fucking evil. I respected the game. You know what I mean? Like, I respected the evilness of, yeah, of the these conniving characters. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, I respected how like horrible and conniving they were. And when they got away from that and it just turned into like an episode of 90210, I was like, fuck this. I'm not doing this. So
nice.
That's kind of where I stand on it. So getting, you know, I'm sorry that we shadow over this.
No, that's okay.
So
I was going to even say, just to bring it back to like Waterworld, like last week, I felt like I'm never trying to be like too negative. I was just like, Waterworld was grossing me out like so many levels. I was, and I don't remember if we talked about it, but when they're rowing the giant oil tanker with the giant metal oars, I was like, oh my God. Like, all I could imagine is like if I was the guy like touching the nasty, rusty ass, heavy ass oar in this stinky, smelly, smoky, shithole, rusted out tanker. And I was like, this is my life, like for the foreseeable forever. But to this one, I mean, so yeah, let's see. I watched it with Alyssa and it was just so like shocking and crazy. And yeah, like all the characters are just like assholes. And I think I saw another Letterboxd review that joked like, you know, it's almost like this movie feels like the invention or the popularization of a certain category on a certain website. like the stepbrother, stepsister stuff, which is like so crazy. That's even like a bet that they're doing. Like, this movie is just like so over the top ridiculous for me, and I really like that about it. And another big thing it does for me is the soundtrack. Like, I think the vibes in this movie are really immaculate for me. Like, when I hear that late 90s music and in the intro, and he's like driving into the city, and then it ends and she's driving out of the city in the same car with that music, I'm like, I feel like my soul is ascending to heaven. I'm like, play this shit when I die, dude. So it's like, I don't know, it's so ridiculous and so over the top. And like, I just kept thinking, like, I could not fathom like sitting in the theater in 99 like watching this shit on the big screen. And yeah, it's just like totally crazy to me. And I feel like the ending was so shocking to me personally, especially the first time when they do have that flip, like where for you, Sam, like you said, you're kind of over it, didn't really work with you, but for me it definitely did. Like, I was just enjoying him kind of being a fucker and almost like it felt like he kept having like a Joker moment the whole movie. Like his like fake ass smile, and when he's like standing at the top of the escalator in the blue shirt with like the pose, I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like,
I will say that there was a scene where like Sarah Michelle Gellar came home and he was sitting in a chair looking like Neo from The Matrix. Dude, I fucking laughed so hard.
That and another scene, I'll have to get a picture. I took a photograph of that on my phone and I was like, this shit makes me want to take a painting and like paint the scene, because it's like, this movie is so like just ridiculous, super sexually charged, and super just like melodramatic, just like so melodramatic. Yeah, he's like got the shades on, the lights, the one line of the lights like beaming through, and he's just all like bent ass shape. And yeah, just like the total crazy rug pull for me of just like him getting fucking ran over by the car and dying at the end. I was like, oh my God, dude. Like, so I don't know, this movie just like, This is what I mean with like those DVD oddities, where it's like, for some people, yeah, like I could totally see, I don't like this, this is stupid, this is just whatever, left in the past, and that's totally fine, I get that. But for me, I'm like, wow, like this shit is like totally crazy, and I'm just like in awe of it existing, kind of. And like, it's like, I was gonna ask you guys too, is like, do you think, you know, we're on the Sigma Cinema podcast, is he a Sigma? You know, like, he's talking to his therapist in the opening and he's talking about how she has beautiful legs and wants to photograph her. And then, you know, she gets a call from her daughter, and he did, like, revenge porn on her. And, like, he's like, oh, I slept with your daughter. And he's just like, oh, my. With that fake-ass, joker-ass smile he's doing. Like, I don't know. I just think it's crazy. I had to share it for how crazy it was.
It was very Sigma at first. And then, like, did anybody think 20 minutes into the movie that, like, he wasn't going to try to get, like, have a... He wasn't going to, like, turn his life around and try to get with Reese Witherspoon at the end of the movie? Like, did anybody not see that coming?
Oh, I definitely felt that was going to happen.
Right, right. Like, did anybody think that he was going to give up on the game and give up on the bet and because he actually had feelings for somebody for once? It's like, I've seen this so many times in other things. It's just like... I don't know, maybe the French play that this is based on, like, was the first one to do that, and so therefore I'm stupid, and this actually is original and not, like, extremely hokey. But, you know, I certainly didn't feel that way, like, watching it. I was like, oh, you know, Ryan Phillippe is gonna fall for Reese Witherspoon, fall for the good girl, and now, that said, I definitely didn't see him getting hit by a car and dying.
And that was awesome. Go ahead, Neil.
Sorry. I was just saying, like, I think that the way this movie stands out is that it is, like, sort of like the nastiest and grossest version of that, because, like, again, very, like, we open on him, like again, the first scene is him revenge porning his therapist's daughter, and it's not even revenge; he just did it for fun, I guess.
Yeah.
And so later he, you know, he tries to be a good boy with Reese Witherspoon and goes to, like, the old folks home. I'm like, I don't know that that's enough of a redemption arc for you, man. Like, we do not have enough time in an hour and 37 minutes to fully, like, redeem you. So, like,
right.
And, you know, I'm fine, like, in the concept of, like, oh, we're gonna hold on to, like, some of his, you know, like, he's not gonna become, like, lawful good paladin, but, you know, we can buff him up a bit. But it was just, we're starting real low and we're not getting much further.
Yeah.
But I think that this movie was probably a little, you know, I think it's meant to be provocative. I think it was probably,
you know, other movie, like,
character development.
Oh, go ahead, Neil.
I was just gonna say, as far as character development and growth go, like, you know, it's very rushed and, like, at no point did I like start to care about him as a person so that I wanted to see him succeed.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I was just gonna say, Kenny, the other movie that you said, I think you just have a scene for, you have a thing for scenes with movies where a guy is, like, driving a car and listening to music, because he said the exact same thing about Hard Boiled when the guy is, like, in that 1989 Mazda, the red Mazda, and he's, like, jamming out. And...
Oh, my God. Yeah. There's something magical about that, because even that, like, so there's a song. I don't really know this band, by Counting Crows, and he's driving. It's when he's, gonna go, basically, like, you know, he's in love with Sarah Michelle Gellar, or Reese Witherspoon. And he's driving across the bridge, and it's like, I am colorblind. I was like, that moment, I'm like, this is what I mean with the Y2K stuff. I'm like, it's pre-9/11. Everything's okay. Right. Like, I'm floating, man. So it's like, with all the characters' progression and stuff, it's like, I don't give a flying fuck about any of that. It's like, I'm just, like, coasting on vibes the whole movie. And the I feel like this movie is really, like, opulent, and you see that high class society. Like, I think it's beautifully shot and some really beautiful, like, locations, like the therapist room, like the houses and stuff they're going to, like his car. I just think it's, like, very, very pretty in lots of ways.
Definitely. They talking about upper class society in the late 1990s in Manhattan. I mean, you remember in, like, in the Matrix when Morpheus is talking about, like, well, the Matrix tried to create a perfect world, but the human mind wouldn't accept it. So we had to do the best that we could. And what we came up with was basically New York City as it, or Earth as it existed in 1999. I mean, like, Gideon's right. This is like, this is the last couple of years before 9/11 happened, and then a chain of events spiraling off of that put us into the world that we live in now. And you know, it was like sort of like the last hurrah of that version of the United States. And this is like a bunch of rich people at the height of their power, in the probably the most expensive place to live in the United States is the Upper East Side of Manhattan. They're in like beautiful shots of Central Park. The Plaza Hotel is in a bunch of this movie. They kind of like, even the things people say, they're like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I think I'm gonna go to Paris for the summer. It's like, god damn, man, I fucking
right wish. For like the end of his summer or whatever. Yeah, just yeah. Casually. I'm like, oh,
just okay. Just casually, I'm just gonna go to Paris for a month. God, yeah. What a
awful life. Just the final thing, like, you know, we treat like the main characters kind of like adults, but they're like 17-year-old kids.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. Ugh. And that, yeah, I agree. Cause like, I feel like for me, for some other movies, like I definitely get like really icked out and grossed out by some stuff like that. But where this doesn't, is just like, they just so clearly look like well into adulthood. Adults, it's like, yeah. And they talk about, yeah, like going to school. I think they're, yeah, like in high school, but I don't really, I'd have to look it up, like what their character age is.
Reese Witherspoon's dad is the new headmaster of their high school.
Right. So that's crazy.
And man, money doesn't talk, it swears. So here we are with all these snooty rich kids. What else do we want to say about this movie? The only performance I really like in this movie is the, I don't know her name, the brunette girl that's like being tutored by the black music teacher.
Oh really? Okay.
I kind of like her. I don't know what it is. I kind of like that character.
That's so funny, because like, she is arguably my least favorite character.
Okay.
Like,
I'm just gonna point out Sam likes her so much that he can't remember her name.
You know, I feel that way about a lot of women, but continue. Jesus.
Well, so I wanted to shout out the Gregster, very minor character. Yeah. I like the Gregster quite a bit. Yeah. And even just like, I think when you're first introduced to him, he's like recounting a sexual encounter allegedly with a woman and telling her to like suck his dick, very aggressively, sounding borderline sexual assault, sexual harassment. But he's just bragging with the bros, and then, you know, he gets a call from his old fling, and then just totally switches, flips the script. But her, yeah, what the hell is her name? I'm looking at IMDb. Cecile Caldwell, Selma Blair. Yeah,
yeah. I kind of like Cecile in this movie. She was like, she's just a funny character to me.
Well, for me, it's like, she almost like icked me out the most. Where I was talking to Alyssa about it, I was like, is she like mentally disabled or something? You know, she really like feels like it a lot. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
And I was like, I don't know if she is, or like that's what they're going for. And she's like, I think it's just like, she is so incredibly like sheltered that she's very like, I don't know, like wide eyed and just like overly innocent and just like doesn't really know things. But just the way she played it was just like, oh my god, like it was just like a bit ridiculous for me.
I think that's also amplified by like, everybody in this movie is like very one-dimensional, like hedonistic, just awful people, and so like her being like not fully on board with that just like makes her just seem stupid, because there isn't character depth to like fall back on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think trying to think of some other side characters. There's the black music teacher again. Like, not really enough to go on here.
Which, like, I didn't mind his character when he was like doing the tutoring and stuff, but I felt like his character was kind of dragged out like near the end. I was like, why is this character like still here? Like, he got fired. Like, I don't know. Yeah. He didn't need to be in the end of the movie at all.
Yeah, Michelle Gellar be fucking everybody. Like, we don't need to know about this guy too. You know, it's just kind of assumed.
Mm-hmm.
Some point. I'm trying to. Right. I'm struggling to what even think about a side character.
Everybody does it, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah, I mean, and I appreciate that there's a character that's very much talking about, like, you know, why is it okay for men to be conquerors and why is it not okay for women? Do I think there's a double standard on that? Absolutely, I think there's a double standard on that. And that's all well and good, but, you know, again, it doesn't mean I have to like this person just because she happens to be right about this one thing. She's right about it. I still think she seems like a dick, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but I, you know, Gideon, I can kind of understand where you're coming from with, like, the vibes on this movie. I think it is sort of a vibe fest, and if you're not really picking up on that, there's, like, not a lot to go on. But now that you're saying that to me, that's clicking a little bit more.
And I didn't, like, expect you guys to really, like, be really jazzed about this. But I did want to bring it just to kind of, like, I don't know, show a different kind of movie than maybe what I usually show. And I just do think it's, like, so ridiculous that I just kind of need to, like, share it with some people and talk about it. Because I've only seen it with Alyssa and only seen it this second time now. Do we have any, like, favorite scenes or things, or least favorite scenes, just different things? You know, major or minor gripes and different things like that. I'm just kind of curious at other threads we can pull at.
I think for me, like, a lot of the early scenes of Ryan Phillippe, like, manipulating his way through things or through relationships, he kind of reminded me a little bit, forgive the comparison here, of Tyler Durden from Fight Club at the very beginning, where he was this, like, sort of devil may care above it all kind of thing. And I think what really turned me against this movie was him betraying that in the last, let's say, 25% to 30%.
Right.
So I would say, like, a lot of the beginning, like, the intro is great, where he sets things up with the psychiatrist and the psychiatrist's daughter. I think that was, like, really smartly done. And I was down for that movie that the first 10 minutes sold me on until it became something else. And then I wasn't down with it anymore, but like that early stuff
with the ending real quick, how it kind of soured on you. I don't know. Cause I almost feel like, you know, I haven't seen, like, a whole lot of rom-coms, but I do like what I have seen. And I wonder if it's, you know, similar, like, when I go see a John Wick movie, I'm just going for the explosions, the action, all that stuff. Kind of, you get what you paid for. So I wonder if that's, like, similar for, like, the rom-com crowd, where it's, like, they are just, like, shitty and backstabbing, and it's, like, a very kind of trashy rom-com type movie. But you still get that, for some people, like, heartfelt romance at the end.
You know?
I wonder about that, but I don't know.
Rom-com.
What'd you say?
I just want to say I would not call this a rom-com person.
Yeah, it's like, I feel a little weird calling, because there is romance and I'm laughing a lot, but it's not like a traditional rom-com. It's, like, hard for me to kind of categorize what this would be. I should look at IMDb.
You know, I think it should be said that I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with, like, wanting to pay the cost of admission of a movie theater ticket to, you know, go see attractive people make out and have sex with each other. Right. I mean, like, I don't think that is such a horrible thing, especially in the late 90s when, you know, access to the internet was just, like, so much more restricted than it is now. And, like, for a long time in Hollywood, that was a huge part of a star's drawing power, and it's always been a huge part of the industry. Like, we don't see typically, like, ugly people in movies, right? Like, we go because we want to have a fantasy, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that per se. I mean, I know it's all supposed to be, like, kids and things like that, and there were contemporary reviews at the time that said, like, you know, teenagers used to go see movies so that they could, like, they could watch adults be romantic, and now adults are going to the movies to watch teenagers be romantic with each other. And, you know, I'm not enough of a, like, cultural anthropologist to be able to understand exactly what's going on there or if it's right or wrong. But, you know, I could see if I was, like, a 16 or 17 year old girl just being like over the moon about this movie and, you know, all the attractive people that are in it, or if I was starting to have conflicting feelings, you know, I'd be pretty into this movie. And what I'm trying to say, I guess, is that I don't necessarily deride that. I think that's as perfectly an acceptable reason to go to see a movie as any reason that I might want to go see a movie. I just don't happen to fall in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
Right. With this one in particular, like, you know, like I think we all thought that Selma Hayek was really attractive in From Dusk Till Dawn, right? Like that is a big part of the appeal of that movie. But like,
mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with being like, you know, wanting to see this movie because it has a bunch of attractive stars in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay too. But you know, that only gets you so far. You got to have steel in the walls.
Mm. Okay.
Neil, you've been quiet. What's on your mind?
No, I'm just kind of digesting what you were saying there, and I just feel like we're on so many lists now.
Yeah, I know.
But I have one final thought before I'm ready to score, and mostly just like what, or actually, I guess it's like a two-pronged thought. Number one, one thing I will say positively for this movie is that on a certain level, it is kind of timeless. In that, like, there's the revenge porn scene from the beginning. But, you know, they're not like relying on, you know, smartphones or the internet. Like, you could, in terms of like, the major story beats, you could make this movie today and it could just be awful with just like lots of like the camera zooming into somebody's screen and waiting for like their next text message to pop up. Mm-hmm. And so I will give them credit for like having things pushed through via character face-to-face interactions, mostly even if they're like sending proxies rather than speaking directly to one another. But at the other part of that, though, is that it is very much like a time capsule. Like,
mm-hmm.
I was shocked at the concept of revenge porn like existing in '99. Like, oh my god, he put nudes of her on the internet without her consent in 1999. Was that possible? Like, did people think to be that awful back then? And of course they did. But it was very strange to think about it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, just like hearing Sarah Michelle Gellar use homophobic slurs.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, what? What sort of movie am I watching? Oh, it's from '99. Yeah, checks out. But
Neil Gideon, I've got a question for you.
Go ahead. Or did you have more, Neil?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much it. Just like very, like on the one hand, kind of timeless, but also very '90s in a way that I was.
Mm-hmm.
Not fully expecting.
Okay.
My question, Gideon, is you have given movies ones and twos in the past based on thinking that the main character was amoral or not likable.
Right.
So what gives?
Right. Yeah. And that's something I think about too. Or even ones where I think about when I watched what was it? Was it Lone Ranger or what was that Western we watched?
High Plains Drifter.
Yeah. Where that one just kind of made me like really uncomfortable. But then when we talked about it more at the end, like with the sexual assault stuff, I was like, oh, it like reframed kind of how I thought about it and experienced the whole thing. But with this, it's just like, they're very amoral, but I'm just like endlessly entertained. Like he is like his fake smile he's doing all the time, flashing that, you know, at everybody. Like it's just killing me, dude. It's like sending me. It's so funny. He's just, yeah, he's having his Joker moment constantly. The melodrama is off the charts in this movie. So with the amoral stuff, I don't know. I guess it just really depends on the setting where it's like, was it High Fidelity, Sam? Right? Like him, I just like I liked aspects of that movie, of like the record store and like him talking about music and music history and having this vast collection. But like, I don't know. It's like, I guess I didn't find him as likable, and he just like really kind of annoyed and pissed me off, where this guy really just like entertains me. And I don't really, I don't know. It's something I've been thinking about with that kind of thing, where it's like, yeah, it's like, how come I do like this guy, Sebastian? It might be even worse than that guy, you could say.
Would it have something to do with the fact that like High Fidelity, I don't think that High Fidelity is trying to sell you on the fact that like, oh, John Cusack is like a good guy, right? Right. But I do think that it is from his movie, and it's what I love about it is that it is the author, it's the writer of the movie telling you things that are wrong with themselves, right? It is like self-confessional in that way. Mm-hmm. And like, hopefully you come to be sympathetic toward John Cusack. Whereas I think in Cruel Intentions, the lead character is so obviously despicable that like you just love to hate him.
He's like cartoony almost, right? Right.
Yeah.
Where that one is. Oh, go ahead, Neil.
I was going to say that there's something to be said for being a charming dick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you know, I love. So.
Say that again.
From. As Sam knows very well, I often sympathize with the bad guy. So,
Okay.
I'm ready to give a score if you guys are.
I did want to shout out a quote. I thought that was funny while we're kind of talking about time capsule and stuff like this. I think when they're talking to the cellist, like trainer or teacher, and he's like, "Oh, I could write her an email." He's like, "Email." That's for geeks and pedophiles. Oh my god, dude. Oh, it's just so funny.
You know, that just reminds me, I was like recently listening to this old like Bob Dylan press conference from like the mid-90s, and somebody's like, "Are you on the internet?" And he's like, "No, I'm not on the internet. I'm afraid I'm going to get lured somewhere by some sex pervert, so I've decided to not get on the internet." I just thought that was funny hearing him say that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I think that was pretty much it. I don't think I have anything else. I'm just kind of looking at the quotes. Yeah, I talked about the music and the scenery, just how it was shot and framed. I really, really liked. Yeah, I think I'm good. I'm good for scores.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 2. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think if it stuck the landing more, I could have seen myself maybe giving this a 3. And like if it had followed through on the meanness of it, and it had really like stuck with how horrible these characters were, but it didn't do that, and it kind of had this like sappy familiar ending that I feel like we've seen a lot of times. So, yeah, the ending really brought it down for me quite a bit.
Do you feel like the meanness? There was any of that left with like how his journal gets published and stuff, you know, and it like ruins Sarah Michelle Gellar's life.
I don't know. It struck me like the thing I was thinking, this is like the wrong era, but it kind of reminded me of the ending of The Breakfast Club in that way, where like he's like, you know, sincerely, The Breakfast Club, and then he like fucking throws his fist in the air, you know, like that was Ryan Phillippe's final act of rebellion or something. I don't know. I thought it was cheesy, and by that point I didn't care anymore.
Well, didn't print it though, right? That was just his own
right, they just like found it,
right? Well, the is it Sarah Michelle Gellar? No, Reese Witherspoon. She got it right from him,
right?
But then she got revenge on Sarah Michelle Gellar by printing it,
right? Right. Yeah, it was like fine, but you know, I just like wasn't sold on where any of this wound up for any of our lead characters. So, had a hard time connecting with and rooting for people. So I think still a 2 in my mind, although I take the vibes bit of it. With a grain of salt. I think there's something to be said about like the late 90s vibes and the upper crust and getting to RP as like a really rich person. And I could see if I was somebody else thinking this movie was a lot better. But I would say two for me. I mean, it kind of sits right alongside Alita in terms of like mm-hmm. things that we've done recently. Mm-hmm. So yeah, two for me.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it the same score. Like there are a couple of like distinct features that stops it from being a one for me. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, with the vibes, like I can see somebody who's like on the same wavelength, like having favorite scenes that they have, like, you know, I've got that scene on YouTube on my playlist for mm-hmm. you know, on my Evil Bastard playlist or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I guess like the thing that comes, like it's not bad in that, like, it's well crafted in a lot of ways. Like, and we talked about lighting, we talked about there's some good shots, there's lines that are funny, there are some good performances. Like, it's not bad, right? Like, it's not Return to Zombie Island.
Not Death to Smoochie.
I like Death to Smoochie more than but the comparison I had in my head was like, there are ingredients in this movie that, you know, prepared a different way, presented a different way. Like I can see it coming together and making a dish that I would like, but whoever did this, like, they made a meal that wasn't for me. Like, mm-hmm. we can make the same, we can take the same ingredients and make two separate dishes, and I'll like one and not like the other. This movie not made. Mm-hmm. It's not a one. It's not objectively terrible. If I'm really like stepping back from myself, like mm-hmm. I can see, like, I'm not going to be surprised if Gideon gives us a four. I can see somebody giving this a four, but I would never give it a four.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Neil, the meal comparison was a absolutely beautiful metaphor. That was I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one. That's a very good way of phrasing it. It's like, quality ingredients put into a thing that is just not for me. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you guys know what Minnesota sushi is?
No.
Neil, do you know what this is?
Oh, yeah, but it's all good.
it's a pickle covered in cream cheese and then wrapped in ham.
Oh, these things?
Yeah.
I've eaten them. I didn't know they were called that. What the fuck?
I love all those ingredients separately. Minnesota sushi is fucked up, though. That's like
it is like a uncanny valley texture nightmare, kind of. I have to kind of brace myself. I don't mind eating them, but I can maybe only have like four tops, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, slimy wet meat, crunchy yeah. pickle and cream, like, cheese, like, what,
like one time at I'll have one at Christmas. I'm not eating any more than that.
That's right.
But let's just be real. That is a dish made by a pregnant woman having a very particular set of cravings.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Now I'm imagining Liam Neeson. I have a very particular set of cravings. All right, guys. Well, I think it's my turn to pick for maybe not next week, because I think
it's got to be his rating.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
All good.
Preempted him, I think. I can see getting in four.
No, you're fine. So, man, with this, I do got a spoiler warning for Shadow of the Colossus and RoboCop. But the end, like, similar to like what you mentioned when the horse fucking falls yeah. into that huge canyon, yeah. and when the dude in RoboCop that gets all melty and gets fucking yeah. ran over by the car, when he gets hit by the fucking car. Oh my god, I'm just dying laughing. Like, it's like, I'm like,
I was thinking give... like slow motion. Blame it on the black star.
Oh my god, it's just, I just like could not, like, for how just ridiculous this movie was already on like I think the kind of like crux to the plot is like he's trying to seduce this like virgin who's like very proud about it, proud enough to like write an article about it or some shit in a newspaper, so he can have sex with his stepsister, which is already like a fucking insane plot, and then like for it to end with him getting hit that way in his like vampire ass trench coat with the red on the inside lining, it, like, I don't know, this movie just kind of like cracked my brain open. And even thinking about that, like the iconic like lesbian kiss scene in the park, I'm still just like, this must have been fucking insane in the theater, like really crazy. So for me, like when I first watched it, I gave it like a 3.5. Like, it's almost like hard for me to give it above a 3 because I do feel like it's kind of like a garbage or like trashy kind of movie. But I love how it's shot. I think the chemistry between Ryan Philippe as Sebastian and I always mix it up, but Sarah Michelle Gellar as what the fuck is her character's name? Catherine. I think they have great chemistry. I just had a lot of fun with it. I love the music. I love how it's shot. I love the, you know, I love that Y2K feel of everything. And it's like, I mean, Neil might be right. It's like, I might be more towards the 4 on this end. Like, I think I'm going to just keep coming back and liking it more and more, but I'm having trouble like separating, like, how do I feel about the movie as a whole versus how do I feel about like my experience and enjoyment with the movie, you know what I mean? So it's like, I think for now I'll leave it at a 3 that I really love.
Okay, I think that's fair,
you know. And ask me in 5 minutes, it's a 4, you know.
Yeah, sure. Everybody's just been shitting on it for an hour, you know. You're gonna feel worse about it right now than you did at the end of the movie when the guy got hit by the car.
And the Gregster, shout out to Gregster,
man. Yeah, Gregster is like,
he's always at my back, man.
You know, I was just about to say that, like, this would have been a good film in 40s movie. No, it wouldn't have. No. I don't want to watch this with any other humans in the room.
No. Well, what did Grace think about it? Did she enjoy it or no?
No, she didn't like it.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, same thing. Okay. She was like, this sucks, but.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
I appreciate you guys watching it.
That's okay. You guys have watched plenty of movies that I like that you guys think sucks and vice versa. So, you know, we're here to spread the... We're not here to do Lawrence of Arabia and Citizen Kane every week. We're here to expand the, you know, explore the space, as it were. Okay, so speak... Go ahead.
Just to piggyback on that real quick. And one thing I think that has helped me with this podcast, just, yeah, being more exposed to different things, maybe not totally to my taste, but I do like the idea of, like, I need to give this another shot. And maybe it was, like, the time and place when I watched it. It didn't totally click with me. So I think there is something to that with movies. Not necessarily saying that for you guys with this one, but just movies in general.
But. Oh, totally. There have been movies and games that I play it one time and I'm like disappointed by, and then I play later when I grow up a little bit, and then it's like way better. Mm-hmm. Uncharted 4 is the best example ever of this.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I think the movie that I'm picking is going to be one that I've never seen it before. And I think I'm really, really going to like it. And I think you guys are not going to like it. But I don't know. Okay. So I think, your jury duty next week, Gideon?
Yeah, it's like right now it's tentative, but okay. I don't know, like they still are going to let me know. I don't know if I'm going to be there multiple days or if it's going to get canceled or rescheduled. Right. So I'll let you guys know.
You haven't even been selected because they bring in a lot of people.
I've got like the summons, right?
Right, right.
But I'm on call, they said.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I would like to do the Brad Bird movie Tomorrowland.
Oh, okay.
Have any of you seen
with
this?
With Clundog?
With Clundog, yeah.
I have not.
Yeah, I remember the ads coming out for it.
Nobody saw this movie. I mean, it bombed.
Right, yeah. Okay.
But I love Brad Bird.
Right, same. Because he did Iron Giant, And
Incredibles. And The Incredibles.
And I love
And Ratatouille.
Movies. Oh, shit. Okay. Nice. Okay. Yeah, I would watch it based on that. Because yeah. I also, like Neil, I remember watching the trailers and thinking it looked cool. But yeah, I never saw it.
And I have, like, I have a thing, like a fan theory about Brad Bird that I think is like applicable, and it'll be funny on the podcast. So it's a good, it kind of like ties into The Incredibles and things like that. So okay. we'll talk about Brad Bird, and we'll talk about Tomorrowland and what a weird nut job he is.
Sweet.
So yeah, you know, we'll keep our ears open. We'll see if you're going to be back from jury duty. I'll watch Tomorrowland this weekend and we'll take it from there.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, boys.
Peace out, guys.
Later. Bye.